This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Aditya Mohite. He is a staff scientist with the Materials Synthesis and Integrated Devices Group at Los Alamos National Laboratory, and Wainid Nie, who is a postdoc in that same group. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, MC.
So you guys are working on solar cell research and development using new materials, specifically a compound called perovskite. What is perovskite?
Yeah, so perovskites have been around for a long time. They were sort of these are materials which were discovered in the 1800s. They've been around for a long, long time. However, this perovskite compound which we are working on is a combination of an inorganic and an organic compound, and it's a special class of perovskites. So
perovskite is not one thing; it's a number of different.
It's a class of materials. It's just. It's a compound which is represented by a certain general chemical formula, and so any material which falls into that category is a perovskite.
That was discovered by Mr. Perov.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. And so this one is a specific class of this material, which is a combination of an organic material and an inorganic material. Typically, previous examples have been inorganic materials. And so this was discovered by a Japanese scientist and also pioneered later by Henry Snaith at Oxford University. And what they did was made these perovskite films and made specifically showed that if you make solar cells out of these materials, then they have remarkable performance. In fact, breakthrough performance, which has stagnated the field, for over the last 15, 20 years for this class of solar cells.
Now, solar cells, comparable solar cells, are traditionally made of silicon?
That's correct. So traditionally, all solar cells, what you put on the roofs today, are made of silicon. And that's sort of the bread and butter of the solar industry today. And then the ones which are, put up in space, they are made of more expensive materials like, high-quality semiconductors like gallium arsenide, etc.
So using perovskite is something that is relatively new?
So this specific organic, inorganic perovskites are relatively new. Because the properties just demonstrated recently, as in solar cell, but in other electronic devices application, they have been there for a few years already.
Okay. So what does this material have on silicon?
Yeah. So one of the biggest challenges, I guess, for the solar, in order to make a breakthrough in the solar is something called cost per efficiency, or efficiency per cost, I guess. And which means that you want to have a technology which is efficient, but yet cheap, right? And that's the fraction they look for. And so right now, silicon dominates because it's low cost, and it's efficient, and it's durable, right? Now,
no sand shortage.
Exactly. Everything is silica, and people have figured this out over, decades of research of how to process silicon. Now, so the challenge is that how do you use a new material that is cheaper than silicon, right, but is yet also as efficient? And so that's where there's been a lot of research going on, and people have used nanomaterial technologies, several things, polymers, quantum dots. A lot of work has been done in those areas. And so far, efficiencies have been limited to about 10%. And so what this perovskite research did in this past, last 3 or 4 years, just in 3, 4 years, these efficiencies are now reached 20%, starting for almost nothing. And so this has been a remarkable breakthrough. And so this is now getting comparable to efficiencies you would get with sort of silicon solar cells or just a little bit shorter than that. And so that's where. And these materials have the advantage that they are solution process and they are really cheap. And so the promise holds that, this may be a technology which could be, very potentially powerful, maybe not in replacing, but augmenting silicon or, photovoltaic research.
Now, where is perovskite found? Do you dig it out of the ground?
It's more of a synthesized work. It's not naturally existing on the earth, but it's more like taking two different compounds and mix them, and the organic compound is synthesized in the laboratory.
Well, what are the main ingredients that you work from? I mean, what is it synthesized from?
Mm-hmm. So right now we're using lead-based perovskite, which is lead and menthol ammonium, which is the organic compound, and iodine. So the ratios, the stoichiometry will be 1:1:3. That makes the perovskite structure, because generally in oxide perovskite, like calcium, titanite, oxide, they are 1:1:3. So in our case, we use lead and organic and halide in the ratio of 1:1:3.
But lead?
Yes.
Does that mean that the compound is very heavy?
It's a heavy metal compound, but it's earth abundant element, which makes it cheap.
And of course, there has been thought about the use of lead in a solar cell, whether that's going to be viable or not. But it turns out that the amount of concentration of lead in a solar cell is comparable to a background concentration that you have in your body. So, and of course, more work needs to be done, to just see the toxicity aspects of this. But that's what seems to be, the common belief right now, that the amount of lead is very minuscule.
It's very minuscule. And also, you're not going to have children licking the solar cells.
Right? Exactly. Yes. But this is an event of, for example, if there's a solar panel on your roof and if there's a fire. And is the lead going to leak out? And that's sort of, those are the kind of things. So they are extreme cases, but something that, before deployment has to be considered.
Right, exactly. So in layman's terms, if this is possible, tell us everybody knows there's solar cells on people's roofs, you see them, and sun goes in, electricity comes out. What happens in between? They're pointing at each
other. Yes. So I guess you're asking how a solar cell sort of generates electricity. And so typically what happens is when you have light, any sort of light, and for example, sunlight incident on a solar panel, it creates charges. In this case, free charges, right? There's a positive and a negative charge which is created. And there is a certain force, which is an electric field in a device, which separates these charges, right, and produces a current, right, and so that's how sort of electricity is sort of generated. And so what you get is a voltage. You also get a current, and so the product of that sort of gives you a power, which is what you would use for any sort of application, running a toaster and things like that in your house, right.
And so, what makes a cell more and less efficient?
So an efficient cell would be, how efficient is it at converting this light to electrical energy, right? And so how much of power is produced per input power? So for example, we know there's a standard, so the amount of sunlight which falls on Earth, which is a certain amount, which is well calibrated, and so what they do is they said, this is the input power. How much is the output you're getting? How much output power? And so that determines the efficiency of a solar cell, right? So the output over input. And typically, standard like silicon solar cells have about 20 to 25% efficiency. In comparison, perovskites are now at about 20%.
Okay, so now they're comparable, but not higher. Now, do you feel like, is the research that you guys are doing designed to try to get more efficient than silicon solar productivity?
I think the efficiency is comparable right now, but the more importantly, in order to get the device to work in the real life, it has to be scalable, which means you cannot make a tiny device to produce because the power is small. You have to make it big. And also, the reliability is another important thing for this technology to be commercialized, because you need a device to work for 20 years, rather not like a week. But right now, the advantage for perovskite is not only efficiency, but also the cost-effective processing. You can process it through solution, but it still get a high-quality crystal. But so for silicon panel, you usually need a huge temperature to produce those crystalline materials to be efficient, which costs a lot of money, of course. But in this case, we can make it cost-effective and also thin film, which make it flexible and lightweight. Those all can reduce the cost for installing the panel eventually. So those are the advantages so far.
Yeah, and so in our mind, I think the efficiency will never be a problem. I think, you know, we'll get to efficiencies which are comparable and maybe even higher than what silicon gives out. I think the main thing is going to be stability, reliability, durability over time. And so that's where a lot of emphasis has to be, you know, given.
And so if your research pans out the way maybe you hope it will, what will you have? More efficient panels, smaller panels, more flexible? What would be different?
Not necessarily smaller panels, but they'll be efficient panels, more efficient than silicon at a cheaper rate, you know, much, much, much cheaper. And so what you pay for, you know, why do you not see solar panels on every rooftop today? It's probably because it's expensive. It takes about 7, 8 years, 9 years to get your money's worth, right, to break even. And so this time period will be really shortened. Maybe, you know, if you get, you know, your money's worth within a year, then more people will be interested in this, right?
Right, right.
And so that's the idea. That's the challenge, which is not really a scientific challenge, but more on, you know, I guess an economic...
The silicon panel, the challenge right now is the cost. Although the material has been, the cost for materials has been reduced, but the installation and inspection and all of those costs, you have spent, invest a lot of money to use this clean energy. And maybe if you use it for only for 10 years, the total cost is still higher than the normal electricity you get out of the plug. So not too many people are willing to choose this new renewable energy to power their house. But if you can reduce the whole investment in the beginning, like if you spend $1,000, you can power the whole house. You can definitely reduce the cost for compared to the conventional electricity power.
Right, and everybody would do that in a minute at least homeowners.
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so one thing that everybody has noticed is, like, I'm holding right now my cell phone in my right hand, which has in it way, way more power than the supercomputers of my childhood, right?
Exactly.
And so when you talk about solar, I mean, in the non-scientist's imagination, you can imagine a cell the size of a cell phone on your house that powers the whole house. But of course, there's going to be actual physical limits at some point to what size you need in order to produce a certain amount of electricity. Or are there limits to that? Like when you use your imagination and project 30 years forward, what are we looking at, or so what might we be looking at?
So what you're probably talking about is power density, I guess. What is the density of power you get from a certain area, right? Power per area or things like this. So now it depends what you're trying to power, right? So as you'll notice, like, you know, electronics in the house or, you know, appliances, they're getting more efficient as well, right? They're consuming less and less electricity. And so what's going to happen is that as that goes on, you're going to need less and less power to power those things as well. So I don't see that the size may change so much of, you know, your panel. That may remain the same or maybe actually get smaller because your power will increase and your power densities will be lower for the appliances. And so I don't see that, it'll be limited by area of coverage on a rooftop, you know.
So we'll still have large panels, but we may actually end up using less electricity?
That's correct, yeah, because generally, you know, appliances are getting, you know, use lower and lower power. There's more efficient lighting around and things like that. So,
have you guys basically done that yourselves? I mean, have you looked at your own power consumption as consumers at home and changed to LEDs or complex fluorescence and noticed that difference?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I guess every light in my house is a fluorescent, you know, light which consumes lesser power. So I guess working in this area, we have been, you know, influenced, I guess. And I would say, you know, maybe 5 years back we didn't care so much, but mm-hmm. this is something that we've at least, you know, we've sort of done consciously.
So when you look at the research that you're doing at Los Alamos now, what are the next steps? What are your hopes? What's the timeline?
So, all right. So this was a sort of a discovery where, you know, you get very efficient sort of devices. Now, now the next step, as you know, we were talking and Vinny was mentioning, was stability and reliability. So while we keep making advances in efficiency of the device, at the same time, you have to keep improving the stability of the device. And so a lot of research has to go into understanding what are the things, what is the science behind getting a stable, you know, perovskite solar cell, right? And what's going to be its durability? How long is it going to last? And things like this. So so that's the next research path. At least that's what we see as the biggest challenge, you know, for commercialization. And so that's what we are doing. And we have some initial studies which are look very promising, which control, you know, the stability of this solar cell. So that's something. And I think the timeline will be, I think this will take at least another 5 years to understand things and to really say where these perovskite solar cells, when are they going to be actually going to go into market and things like this. So at least 5 years, you know, okay. If not more.
So we'll have you back on the air this time in 5 years.
I hope so.
I hope so.
Well, we want to thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Yeah.
Thanks,
Aditya
MC.
Moite and Waini Nie.
Thank you.
Of Los Alamos National Laboratory Materials Synthesis and Integrated Devices Group. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, MC.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to Studio X for their technical support and web design.